My name is Tim Porter, if you didn't hear that first time, senior pastor here, and I'm a rookie with a microphone, and good to be in the room with you all and online. You probably didn't hear that last time as well. Good to be with you as well this morning. Tim already mentioned that I'm going to be looking at, or we're going to be looking at, one of my favorite passages. I don't know if it's my most favorite passage in all the Bible. But it's one of my favorite passages, and I just want to let you know that when I talk about something I'm excited about, I talk really fast, and I've only had half-calf coffee this morning, and so you're just going to have to listen really fast, all right? No, I will try to dial it down just a little bit here because I really want to spend some time to just try to bring this passage hopefully to life and apply it to our lives by the gift of the Spirit. We're in a series called Come and See, and we've been talking about the importance of coming to see Jesus. And there's a shift in this passage for us as readers as we walk through this, because the call is not just in this passage to come and see Jesus. It's that Jesus draws near to us, and as Jesus draws near to us and we see Jesus and we take him in and what he offers to us, the call, the response is to bring Jesus into every relationship that we're a part of. And we've got a role as individuals, we've got a role in bringing friends and neighbors and co-workers and acquaintances and strangers and even enemies to come and see Jesus. And that doesn't mean always coming to see Jesus in a worship gathering. It means in the midst of our conversations, in the midst of our relationships, wherever we live, work, play, or learn, come see Jesus. Come see Jesus right now. Let me tell you about Jesus. And so, yes, this sermon is about evangelism, because this whole passage is about evangelism. Jesus sharing the good news with a woman. She hears the good news, and she starts to say to her friends and neighbors and fellow villagers, come see this man. And then next week, Tim Prince is going to talk about how the disciples come back to Jesus, and they watch what Jesus is doing, like, what are you doing? And Jesus calls them into the mission, just as he calls us into the mission of everyone who's met Jesus, inviting others to meet him as well. One of the other reasons why I'm excited about this passage for us as a church is that our vision as a church is that through the Spirit's leading and empowering, we would display, as a Christ-centered community, we would display Jesus' welcome, attractive, and reconciling presence, that thousands more would experience him in a gospel-inspired life. And in this passage, we see Jesus' welcoming, attractive, and reconciling presence on display, and we see what it can look like when we experience that presence and how we can invite more and more people into experiencing Jesus. So we're going to look at this passage on three headings after we read through it. Gift. Jesus offers a gift. Our thirst. And it's all wrapped up with a person. And so we're going to be reading today from John 4, verses 1 through 30. It's found on page 888 in the Bibles in front of you. 888 in the Bibles in front of you. John chapter 4, verses 1 through 30. Give you a few moments to turn there, and it'll also be on the screens. Verse 1. Now, when Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus was making and baptizing more disciples than John, although Jesus himself did not baptize, but only his disciples, he left Judea and departed again for Galilee. And he had to pass through Samaria. So he came to a town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. And Jacob's well was there. So Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour, so it's about noon. A woman from Samaria came to draw water. And Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. And the Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." And Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it was that was saying to you, 'Give me a drink, give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." The woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep. Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? He gave us the well, and he drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock." Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water that I will give to him will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." And the woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty or have to come here to draw water." And Jesus said to her, "Go call your husband and come here." And the woman answered him, "I have no husband." And Jesus said to her, "You are right in saying, 'I have no husband,' for you have had five husbands, and the one you now have is not your husband. What you have said is true." And the woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem is the place where people ought to worship." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming and is now here when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth." And the woman said to him, "I know that Messiah is coming, who is called Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things." And Jesus said to her, "I who speak to you am he." And just then his disciples came back, and they marveled that he was talking with a woman, but no one said, "What do you seek?" or "Why are you talking with her?" So the woman left her jar and went away into town and said to the people, "Come see a man who told me all that I ever did. Can this be the Christ?" They went out of the town and were coming to him. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I'm going to make a little plug for this in a little bit, but I'm hosting and leading a seminar on April 30th called Sharing Jesus Seminar. I highly recommend that everybody take it. I would love to have you there. It's on Tuesday, April 30th. You can sign up for it on our website, fcchudson.com, and I'd love to have you there to be talking about how to share Jesus, and this is a key passage that we use. But how I usually begin that seminar is to ask people around tables in the seminar. It's like, when you hear the word evangelism, what do you think of? How do you feel about the word evangelism? And typically, the primary emotions that are described are fear and guilt. I'm afraid to do it, and I'm guilty that I don't, if you're a Christian. One of my friends articulated well his association with evangelism. He said, "You know, I look at evangelism this way. It's sort of like plumbing. It's absolutely necessary. It needs to be done, and I need it to be done, and I want it to be done, but I'd rather pay somebody else to do it." I'm like, that's beautiful description. That's a beautiful description. I'm sort of the same way with plumbing. Like, water always finds a way. I hate doing plumbing. I'll do almost anything else. But my friend was saying something really important, is that it needs to be done, but I'd rather pay somebody else to do it. That's why we have pastors. I don't have the gift of evangelism. I'm a teacher, do some leading, I'm an encourager. But Jesus doesn't give the gift of evangelism to everybody, but he expects all of us to share about him and what he's done in our lives so that more and more people, thousands more, can experience him in a gospel-inspired life. So we want to talk through this passage to see that this is something for everyone that Jesus calls us to do. Now notice, what we have to understand, though, to really sort of tap into sharing Jesus is, first we have to understand that Jesus' offer is a gift. He is offering a gift to all of us. And he emphasizes that in the conversation that he has with this woman at the well, both in his language, but then also in his welcoming approach to her. I love that Jesus has a conversation at a well when he is already tired, because there are times when I am just absolutely tired and the last thing I want to do is talk about Jesus. But Jesus uses this opportunity while he was tired, he's worn out at a well, and a woman comes along and he strikes up a conversation with her. Why? Because he wants a relationship with her. We read in verse 7, a woman from Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask for a drink from me, a woman of Samaria?" And John adds this parenthetical remark, "For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." The woman's surprised that Jesus would be talking to her. And it is surprising unless you understand that Jesus is offering a gift. See, Jews and Samaritans hated one another. You know, Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan, and a Jew is thinking there's no such thing as a Good Samaritan. From a Jewish point of view, Jews were the wrong religion. They were racially wrong, ethnically wrong. This woman is most likely socially wrong. She's coming at the noon hour instead of the morning with all the other women, probably because of her relationships with men. She's an outcast. She is an outsider. She is the last person that you would think that Jesus would most clearly reveal himself to, but that's exactly what Jesus does. In this conversation, we've already read it, in this conversation, she's talking about a Messiah and is coming, and Jesus is the most clear that he's been so far with anybody about who he is. He goes, "I, the one who I'm talking to you, I'm he. I'm the Messiah." Why would Jesus choose to reveal himself most clearly to someone who is the greatest outsider from a Jewish point of view? Because it's all about a gift of what Jesus is giving. A gift. It's surprising if you don't understand that at the core of the core of the core of a relationship with Jesus is grace and a gift. Jesus is at a well and he starts talking about water. But he's talking about a water to her, a water that is more essential to living than the water that we can get. So he's at a well, and he's offering her living water. You know, so we see this in verse 10. Jesus answered, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that's saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, he would have given you living water." Now, Jesus is playing on this metaphor here a little bit. He's at a well, which is standing water. You got to dip down into it and bring it back up. You don't know if it's going to be cool. You don't know if it's going to be good water or anything like that. But living water is running water. You want to drink running water. It's fresh. It's refreshing. But Jesus is talking about something deeper. We all need water to live. Some of you remember a few years ago, I was running and I passed out when I was running. Why? Because I wasn't hydrated. We need water to live. But Jesus is saying here, there's a water that he gives that's more important and more essential to living than the very physical water that we need. And it's a gift. And it's a relationship with him. See, we tend to look at the world between religious and irreligious, moral and immoral, good and bad. The good are more deserving. I don't know how many times I've been in conversations with people who think they're going to heaven because they're good people. Good people don't go to heaven. People in relationship with Jesus go to heaven. It's about a gift. And Jesus is letting us know, John is letting us know that the gift is so great and the gift is so grand that it's for the consummate outsider just as much as it's for the religious person. It's for everyone who's thirsty. It's for everyone who's thirsty. See, a gift is only a gift if you're humble enough to receive it. As soon as you try to earn it, it's now a wage. You now deserve it. The Apostle Paul talks this way about a relationship with God and salvation. In Romans 4, now to the one who works, his wages are counted not as a gift, but as his due. And to the one who does not work, but believes in him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is counted as righteousness. It's a gift. And if it's a gift, it's for anyone and everyone. Good, bad, moral, immoral, religious, irreligious. Sometimes the people that I've experienced that are the farthest away from Jesus are actually the religious people. Because it's hard to receive a gift when you've spent your whole life trying to earn it. To receive the gift, though, we have to tap into our sense of thirst. Our sense of thirst. And so Jesus is playing on this and very important and talking about water because he knows that every person is thirsty. I don't know if you noticed this or not, or you thought it was strange in how Jesus is interacting with this woman. He gets really personal, and his request no doubt stung a little bit when he was talking to her, because he says to her, after talking about the water and everything, he says to her, go and call your husband and come here. And she says, I have no husband. And then Jesus lets her know, I know. You've had 5 husbands, and the man you're with right now isn't your husband either. Why is Jesus doing this? It's really personal. Probably shameful for a religious leader to be talking to her about some of these things. She's probably experiencing embarrassment and shame. Why did he do that? 2 reasons. One is he's letting her know that he's a prophet. But he's going to let her know he's even greater than a prophet. Because Samaritans believed that a prophet was coming. They believed that a prophet was coming. And he wants her to know that I am a prophet. I know everything about you, and I still love you. He's letting her know. I know everything about you, and I still love you, and I still want a relationship with you. But the other reason why he's bringing up her relationship with men is because her relationship with men starts to reveal her thirst. She's thirsty for something. Notice that it's not off topic. It's not off topic. She says in verse 15, sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty or have to come here to draw the water. He wants her to know, I'm not talking about some physical water. I'm talking about the thirst of your heart being quenched. So let's start talking about your heart and the thirst that's in your heart. So he brings up, in the context of talking about water and thirst, her relationship with men. What does she want? We can read between the lines a little bit. But her love life reveals her thirst. In some ways, probably she's just like many of us. She wants somebody who's going to love her, who knows her and loves her, and not going to leave her. And loves her the way that her heart craves to be loved. And what Jesus is saying to her is that to understand the water that I give, and the water that I give that you'll never be thirsty again, you have to tap into your own thirst. We've introduced this year in significant ways the fruit-to-root concept and tool, that the fruit of our lives reveals the desires of our hearts and how we're trying to have those desires met. And what Jesus is revealing to this woman is that your relationships with men, your love life, is the fruit of you trying to get something satisfied, a desire deep in your heart satisfied, in relationship with men that only I can satisfy. In conversations, I hear different things like this, and we don't talk about them as thirst, but Jesus wants us to understand them as thirst. Recently, I was talking to a good friend of mine who isn't a follower of Jesus yet, and he has wrapped his whole life around his work. He's just wrapped his whole life around his work, and it was starting to dawn on him that his work is consuming him. It has become his words. It has become his identity. My work, he said, is my identity. And he said to me, he's like, so I'm trying to find some other hobbies or some other things to do so that my work doesn't stay in my identity. And in the moment, it was just, I just sort of took the moment. I just said, I've experienced that as well. I struggle really hard about making my work my identity. I told him, like, you know, during the beginning stages of COVID, you know, this is why my hair is whiter than it should be. I'm only 30. It's like leading through that, trying to handle those things. I made work and I made the mission my identity. And it did damage to my relationship with my wife. So I told him, I said, you're on the right track. Don't make work your identity, it will destroy you. But this is what I know, a hobby isn't big enough to satisfy your soul. To not make work your identity. You're trying to get something. A relationship with Jesus, a real relationship with Jesus where he becomes your identity, he's the only one who's big enough to actually satisfy the longings of your heart. Another friend, he's a follower of Jesus. He's gone through relationship after relationship after relationship. He's trying to find the right person. It's heartbreaking. What's he doing? He's looking for somebody who's going to satisfy that heart thirst. Now, I mentioned both those instances because one of the things that Jesus does, and this is one of the things we talk about here, is that we've got one gospel, one message of good news of Jesus, and it's for everyone, for believer or unbeliever. We're all struggling with the same things. We all have the same thirsts. The only difference is, are we inviting somebody to get their thirst quenched with Jesus for the first time and to learn to let him quench it for the rest of their lives? Or are we in relationship with one another and we're calling one another to come back to the source of thirst that we first drank from him and knew that that was what we were missing in life? And we keep getting tempted and moved away from that. Jesus is the one person for all. He's the one who's come to quench our thirsts. We sang about the goodness of God running after me. Jesus is the goodness of God running after this Samaritan woman. And Jesus is the goodness of God running after each one of us. Will we receive his gift of living water and let him quench our deepest longings and thirsts? I love that John adds this comment in verse 28. So the woman left her water jar and went away into town. Just this nice little biographical comment, but it's a little bit more than that. What did she come to the well for? Water. What did she meet? The living water. She left her jar because she was no longer thirsty. And she was going back to her village to say, come see the man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ? She forgot about the jar because she thought she found the one who she was really thirsty for. Now just pull back big picture. God made us for himself. God made us for himself. And he knows that we will not be fully satisfied unless we are in a right relationship with him. He's made us for him, for himself. And unless we are in a relationship with the living God who made us, we are going to find ways to try to quench that thirst. They're going to keep us moving away from Jesus. They're going to bring pain and brokenness into our lives. And what Jesus is calling us back to is to come back and get our thirst quenched by him and fully satisfied. Now, faith community, if thousands more are going to experience Jesus in a gospel-inspired life, what that means is that you and I need to be continually, regularly, daily, getting our thirst quenched by Jesus in relationship with him. over and over and over again, so that we can say to the people around us and invite the people around us to come see a man who knows everything about me, who loves me, saves me, and satisfies my deepest yearnings and longings of my heart. And faith community, if we're going to help thousands more experience Jesus in a gospel-inspired life, we need to have this understanding from the Bible that, and be convinced that Jesus really does want a relationship with everyone around us. And he is seeking out that relationship. I've been around long enough through all different kinds of worship wars and all that kind of stuff and different types of models of church and stuff like that, where you've got churches that are like, oh, we're going to be seeker-sensitive, and other churches are like, oh, we can't be seeker-sensitive and all this kind of stuff. It's really bad, and all these debates. Please see from the passage what Jesus says. The Father is seeking. Who's the seeker? The Father is seeking. The Father is seeking relationship with the people around us. Do you see what he's doing? Are we willing to join in with him? Because he knows that the only answer to our deepest longings and thirsts is him. And he's done everything he needs to do to bring us back into relationship with him. Now, if you're visiting here for the first time, or if you're online and you're like wondering, this might be you wondering like, oh man, here goes the church again, talking about evangelism and sharing Jesus, talking about the importance of Jesus and how Jesus is the way, the truth and the life and all that kind of stuff. Ah, Christians, when are you going to get over it? This seems so narrow. This seems so narrow. Why do you keep talking about it? This seems so narrow religiously. What about the other religions out there? What do you say about those? Fair question. Real question, fair question. Just want to put this out there just for you. Just to consider. My mom died of a disease that there's no known cure for. Now, if someone were to tell me and announce, we've found the cure for Huntington's chorea, and this is what it is, my first thought would not be, oh, that sounds so narrow that you've figured out the cure. It would be like, thank God. And then, is it really true, and does it really work? So if you're looking at Christians and saying, you're so narrow by talking about Jesus all the time, please don't hear it as narrow. What we're trying to say is that Jesus has told us what the cure is. Don't put it off as being narrow. Ask, is it true? And is he really the cure? That's the really important question. Now, Jesus is not inviting this woman into a set of religious beliefs per se. He's inviting her into relationship with himself. Notice this. Jesus brings her to himself. Once the woman and Jesus are in this conversation, it gets a little personal about her love life, and now it seems like she starts to distract a little bit with Jesus. And so she says to Jesus in verse 20, our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem is a place where people ought to worship. Jesus hears her question. He acknowledges it. Good question. Just so you know, the Jews are right. Salvation is from the Jews. Yes, salvation is from the Jews. So Samaritans, you guys are wrong. But he says this. The hour is coming and is now here when you won't worship on mountains anymore. It's not about where you worship. The hour is coming and now is here. Now, when Jesus talks about his hour, we've seen this now a couple times, or at least once, when Jesus is at the wedding of Canaan, and his mom is coming up to him and asking him, hey, can you do something about the wine? We've got a wine shortage going on here. And what does Jesus say? It's not my hour. It's not my hour. What does he mean by my hour? Whenever Jesus talks about his hour, he's talking about his death. And notice that whenever Jesus is talking to people, he's always thinking about his death. He's at a wedding. He's thinking about what he's going to do to save humanity. and bring people into relationship with him. When he's talking with this woman and talking about temple worship, he's thinking about his death. Why? Well, at the core of temple worship, see, Samaritans believed that the temple should be at one place, Mount Gerizim, and then Jews believed that the temple should be in Jerusalem. And Jesus is saying, that doesn't matter anymore because the hour is coming and is now here. In other words, I'm going to die and I'm putting an end to where you worship. It's not about the temple anymore. Well, why is he thinking about death at temple? Well, because at the heart of temple worship is an animal being sacrificed for the sins of people so that human beings can draw near to the living God. Even though we are so sinful, we can draw near to him because there's a sacrifice that cleanses us from all sin. And what Jesus is letting her know and what Jesus is letting us know is that his hour is to such a degree that he dies in our place, in the place of animals, in the place of our sins, so that we can be brought back into relationship with him. It's not about where we worship anymore. It's always been about who we worship. And what God is doing and has done to bring us back into a right relationship with him. See, this woman's love relationship stood in the way of her being in relationship with the living God. It was a deep offense to God. She sought to get her thirst quenched by her love life with men. That was offensive to God. But God loves her so much, and the Father is seeking her so much that he sent his Son, that Jesus willingly came and drew near to her and draws near to us and dies in our place so that we can be brought in to relationship with God. It's amazing if you read through all the Gospel of John. John's the only one that remembers this about the crucifixion. Jesus said these words on the cross, "I thirst." Jesus became thirsty, taking on the shame, taking on the pain, taking on the curse, taking on all the consequences, the wrath of God that we deserve because we've tried to quench our thirst in all different kinds of ways, and he's able to give us the living water. Why? Because one day he was thirsty for you and me. He became thirsty that we could drink. How did the woman respond? Verse 29, she ran back into her village. "Come see a man who told me everything that I ever did." What was shameful for her, her past, her relationship with men, now became the reason or her ability to talk to other people about who Jesus is. The ways in which we run away do become the ways that we can talk to other people about Jesus. One of the things I firmly believe and become convinced of over the years is that Jesus wants to use every follower of Jesus, wants to work through every follower of Jesus, no matter your personality, no matter your relationships, no matter your giftedness, no matter your personality, your past, or anything like that, but to invite, to use you as you to introduce other people to the living God so that their thirsts can be quenched. This last week, I've heard two amazing stories. One, my wife and I spent some time with Dan and Leah Clancy on Friday evening, brought a meal over to them and just listened to stories. And Dan, again, is preparing to meet Jesus. This last week, Wednesday, he had some energy, and he wanted to go get a haircut. He's bald, but he wanted to look good when he died. So he sat down in the chair, getting a haircut. He told the barber, "This is the last haircut I'm ever gonna get in my life." Just like Jesus is at a well, talking about water, Dan starts talking about how he's dying. And how he has hope because of who Jesus is. The man says yes to Jesus. Amazing. Just heard a story too. I verified it. 11-year-old boy. He's in Faith Kids every week. He's got a group of friends that he hangs out with every day after school. They're running around the neighborhood, and they're so tight. The parents are tight, and they're texting one another, hey, they're at our house. Was it okay if they get a snack? That kind of deal. I mean, there's this pack of boys that are running around the neighborhood. This boy, 11-year-old boy, and his family have been praying for all this group of friends. Nobody else is a Christian in the group. They've been praying that they would come to know Jesus. Just recently, I think in the last 2 weeks, I think it was 2 weeks ago, one of the friends came up to this boy and said, I want to be different. I want to change. I want to be a better person. And now this 11-year-old boy is trying to figure out, how do I best tenderly, graciously share Jesus with my friend? It's 11 years old. I share those, not to guilt you, please. If you come away from here feeling guilt, I've not done my job. I'm not trying to do guilt here. I'm just trying to create excitement that the Father is seeking people around us who he wants a relationship with, and he wants to invite us into the mission. And all it takes, in one sense, is for us to know how Jesus is quenching our thirst, to be able to share that with others, and then to simply pray a prayer that has been life-changing for me. Holy Spirit, you're at work around me. Open my eyes to see what you're doing and help me join in. And I believe that the Spirit will answer that kind of prayer. Holy Spirit, help me to see what you're doing around me. Help me to see it and help me to join in. We're going to move into a time of communion now. And in communion, Jesus is letting us know again that bread and drink are absolutely essential for us to be able to survive. We need food, we need nourishment, we need drink, we need calories to fill us so that we can have that energy. But Jesus is letting us know in communion, in the bread that we're going to eat and the cup that we're going to drink together, he's letting us know that there's something even deeper than that that we really need. What we really need is a relationship with him, a relationship with him where his life satisfies us. And what's important to see about this meal as well is that it's satisfying in the soul because it's building our faith in who Jesus is and in his strength and in his power and what he's done for us. Jesus has come to forgive us and to bring us into relationship with him. And this meal is all about forgiveness and relationship with him. And so as we're passing out the bread, and when you get the bread, what I want to ask you to do just to start to prepare your heart to take this meal is to just talk to God about the ways in which he's already starting to reveal to you about where you have tried to quench your thirst in something other than Jesus, and confess that to him now as you're taking the bread or as you're receiving the bread. I'll come back up in just a few moments, and I'll lead us through eating the bread together.